Now, Rachel Garrod is a respiratory physiotherapist. I said it properly that time. And has been on the show many times before. Today, she's going to be talking to us about a range of subjects, including how home physiotherapy can help people with chronic illnesses and help them move better and feel better. And also how breathing exercises can help reduce asthma symptoms. We are both poorly girls, so we've got a bit of a red cross happening here today in the studio. Welcome back, Rachel.
Thank you.
Excuse us, listeners, if we sneeze and cough all the time because we've both got colds, which actually we should start with because it's important that people have their flu jabs.
Yes, yeah.
Is it flu and pneumonia?
Flu and pneumonia vaccines, yes. Particularly if you're an older person or somebody with long-term health problems as well. Perhaps if you're, you know, in your 50s, it's not so important, but certainly if you're over 75, 60, 70, then yeah, really good idea.
Important thing to do. There's a lot of colds actually going around at the moment, aren't there?
We keep getting
them. Yeah, we know about them. So how can home physiotherapy help people with chronic illness? How can it help them move and feel better then?
Well, I think physiotherapists is well known for treating people's backs and necks problems and things like that, but I think we forget about, in a way, maybe the more mundane side of physiotherapy, where we can actually really just help people to move more freely, help improve their balance, help improve their confidence to walk. And quite often you don't want to go to a physiotherapy practice or a hospital for that kind of physiotherapy. And in particular, if you're somebody who finds it difficult to get out, or you're somebody who has a lot of limitations with mobility, then having somebody to come home and give you an assessment in your own home can make such a difference. Because what we can do is sort of have a look at actually what's around your home for a start. So, I mean, there's always falls are something that we really all want to try and avoid, whatever our age. But certainly as we get older, falling is a big problem with morbidity and cause of death. So, you know, there are simple things we can do around the home about reducing our risk for falls, such as making sure that our rugs are stuck down properly if we've got rugs around on our nice tiles. Making sure that our environment is as safe. Maybe we need advice on where to put a rail or something like that, getting out of the bath. So just little simple things like that can really reduce your risk of fall. Now, that can't happen in a GP's practice and it can't happen in the hospital. Somebody has to come home and see your environment and see how you're living to make that assessment. Then on top of that, if I'm there, usually I sort of get people to do a few standing on one leg exercises or a little exercise called timed up and go, where we ask somebody to sit up and walk 3 meters from their chair and then turn around and walk back to their chair. And I time this, and that's a measure of balance. And so there's really simple home exercises that we can help prescribe, that we can prescribe and help people carry out, that have proven to reduce the risk of falls and to help improve strength and balance.
Is home physiotherapy limited over here?
In my experience, yes, it is. I think you've got very good physiotherapy services, but a lot of them, there's a lot of private physio, which are great. There's physiotherapy, some really good gyms associated with the hospitals and things like that, and some great services with Chiron and with the public health. But I've had phone calls from people who've had been sent home after a really heavy stroke, saying that they've got no physiotherapy support coming in. Mm. I know, and that's not my area, and I've only been able to, you know, advise them to other charities or other help that can offer, other people that can offer help. But there's less of an emphasis on the community support here in Spain, and I think that's probably because there's overemphasis on family networking.
Yeah. I heard an interview actually the other day on TRE about with age concern. I think it was Ian Rutter was interviewing somebody, and they were saying that there was a blind lady in her 90s and she literally couldn't cope on her own, so they wanted to put her out on the streets. Concern came along to help her. And that's the trouble as we get older. If you've got no sort of family over here and around us, it's really frightening.
Yeah.
Really frightening.
One of the ladies I was helping at home, she's very sweet. She's 96, and all she wanted to be able to do was walk with her Zimmer frame again around the house. She recognised she wasn't going to get out, but she'd had a hip replacement 2 years before and had never got out of the wheelchair after a hip replacement. And in about 6 weeks, seeing her twice a week, we were able to let her go from walking from the chair to the toilet, an independent safe transfer from the toilet. And it's just little things like that that Brilliant. Would never have happened if she hadn't had physiotherapy at home.
Yeah, yeah. She's got a little bit of her independence back, hasn't she? Yeah. And also, presumably, the fact that she's moving around is good to keep her limbs and her muscles moving.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the worst thing we can do for our bodies is sit. I mean, even if all we do is stand every half an hour, even people who fidget in sitting have better health outcomes than people who are stationary sitters. I'm quite bad. I'm what we call a stationary sitter. You know, I might go to the gym or walk the dog or do something like that, and then I'll come home and sit. My husband's more of a get up and go and a fidgeter. And health outcomes are even better for people who just fidget, get up and around, moving, even standing at a bus stop. Standing on the bus instead of sitting on the bus has health improvements.
Excellent. Good advice. And we mentioned balance difficulties. What about people with quite serious problems such as lung and heart issues?
Yeah, so that's really where my area of speciality is COPD, which is a lung condition more commonly known as emphysema. And for people like that, it is very, very hard. It's hard to breathe, and so therefore it's hard to move. And the inactivity that comes through being breathless creates its own set of problems where you become weaker, so you become more frail, you also become more unsteady, you then become more frightened of doing anything, which actually has impacts on the way that you walk. So fear of falling actually contributes to falling in its own right. So people with lung disease, one of the best things they can actually do is to be more active, but it can be really daunting, it can be really frightening, and it does need to be done with safety, because obviously I'm there and I can look at oxygen levels and I can look at heart rate monitoring and I can see that they're doing the right amount for their body. I can help advise them on their breathing as they're exercising, because sometimes what we do is we overbreathe, which sounds counterintuitive, really. We always think, oh, take nice deep breaths. But actually, sometimes taking nice big deep breaths can make us feel lightheaded. Mm. And can actually contribute to other problems.
Yeah.
So you need it really helps to be able to go into somebody's home and see how they're moving, see what they're doing, and see if we can actually provide an exercise program using the equipment, the stuff that they've got at home, just using a home-based exercise program.
Yeah. I can totally understand somebody with emphysema or COPD being frightened to exert themselves in any way in case it brings out. I suppose that's what it's like having an asthma attack as well.
I mean, the thing with asthma is that you could perhaps the biggest difference between asthma and COPD that sort of helps people understand is that with asthma you can be normal, in inverted commas. You can have long periods where your breathing does not affect you, and then you may get an infection or you may have an asthma attack, an exacerbation, and then you will be incredibly wheezy. Now that exacerbation needs to be treated differently than the chronic stage of your asthma, but with good treatment, asthma can be symptom-free. But the problem is sometimes people with asthma, they have bad breathing habits on top of the asthma, which has usually been triggered by an asthma attack, and then set up a sort of cycle of breathing that actually makes the asthma more problematic and the symptoms worse. So breathing exercises in asthma are usually around helping people reduce the volume of breathing, help them detect triggers, understand triggers to their asthma, and how to manage their asthma with relaxation and with better breathing control.
Yeah.
With COPD or emphysema, people are breathless all the time. They have good and bad days, but they never have days where they don't have any breathlessness. And with time, that gets worse over time, and particularly the more inactive that they are, then the worse and worse it gets.
Yeah.
But if you're always feeling like you're a bit out of breath and you've got no breath to do anything, to get up that hill or get up those stairs or walk even to the kitchen, then the motivation to do it can be very difficult, as well as, like you said, can be very frightening. But what we do know is that when we do periods of maybe 4, 6, 8 weeks or 12 weeks of pulmonary rehabilitation, sort of exercise and education for people with lung disease, we can have huge impacts on how far they can walk, how breathless they feel, on their quality of life.
Yeah, yeah. And I think having somebody like you there with them is just going to make them feel that little bit safer.
Yeah. And it's about giving people the skills to know what to do, when to do, how to do it, and giving them that confidence and that ability to be able to do it on their own long term, because obviously they don't want me necessarily coming in every week for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, exactly. They need to do it on their own. Yeah. And you mentioned somebody with hip replacement earlier. If somebody has had a hip replacement, presumably they have to learn how to walk properly again so that they don't fall. So can you help improve their gait?
Yeah, absolutely. We can. They probably should be and probably will be over here given exercises in the hospital. And most of them will be given a frame to go home with the frame. And in majority of cases, that will be all that you need. You'll get home, you'll start walking, pottering about with your frame, get your confidence and your strength back. And as the pain decreases and you're able to fully weight bear on that hip again, you'll be back to walking normally. But in a lot of cases, it gets stuck at the frame level, or even worse, can get stuck at a wheelchair level. And that can be after the pain has resolved. It can be for a number of reasons. It might be weakness. It might be fear. It might be stiffness. It might simply just not having been shown what to do.
Yeah, which is really bad.
Yeah.
And you have to do your exercises, don't you? I know people that haven't after a hip operation, and they're just not good at all.
Yeah. I mean, hip operations are good surgery generally. I would always say if somebody has a lot of pain from their hip arthritis, hips and knees, it's well worth going for the surgery, because the recovery generally is superb. And they're a group I used to like helping get out of bed after the surgery, because for many other surgeries, people are in a lot of pain after surgery, obviously. But for hip and knee, hip in particular, you get them out of bed and you think, okay, you're all right, I'll manage the pain. And people would be so much less pain than they were before the surgery that they'd be really, raring to go.
Yeah.
So those two surgeries in particular, when your doctor says, if your doctor, recommends it, I think those are well worth having.
Yeah.
And then a little bit of rehab, a little bit of physio to get you going afterwards at home can just make that difference. And then your quality of life is back up and you're back doing all the things that you wanted to do before.
Yeah, must feel wonderful. Must be the best feeling in the world.
I think those surgeries are really impressive.
Yeah, excellent. And one final thing that you can do, I'm not sure if this is right for now or maybe for people to think about in January, but you have a stop smoking program as well.
Yeah, we use I use a product called Cytosine. Cytosine is a natural herbal supplement, and it's made from the seeds of laburnum tree, which is very interesting. People often say to me, that's toxic, isn't it? Laburnum tree seeds. Well, they're absolutely right, it is, but so is tobacco. I mean, if we ate a whole bunch of tobacco plants, we wouldn't feel very well.
That's an understatement.
Exactly. And what the cytosine does is it helps to, it works on the receptors in the brain. So the brain have little receptors that are stimulated by nicotine. So, and then they release sort of feel good hormones. But the cytosine blocks those receptors, and it kind of makes you feel like you've had a cigarette, or maybe like a non-smoker. So it really, really reduces the urge to smoke. You've still got to use willpower. You've still got to want to stop smoking. You've still got to be in a good place to stop smoking. And I think that's why what the program that I use is sort of a four-prong approach. So we do motivational interviewing to help people really understand why and the benefits and what it would mean for them to stop smoking and how to live as a non-smoker, because that can be quite frightening. I use a bit of hypnotherapy that I've been trained in now to just try and help subconscious to help us relax and engage our subconscious with our desire to stop smoking. And the cytosine and the positive reinforcement of seeing me for 3-4 sessions. And obviously I give telephone support and things like that.
Excellent.
So it's a comprehensive stop smoking program.
Yeah, sounds great. And like I say, people might not want to start it now because we're getting towards the end of the year, but it might be a good one for January.
It's always good to think about. Yeah,
definitely. If you do want to stop now, it's not a problem. So how can people get in touch with you about any of the subjects we've talked about?
I'm here in Spain, so I have a mobile, Spanish mobile, +34. And that number is 652-281-122. Alternatively, you can email me on Rachel Garrod, and that's RachelGarrod, and then it's the number 1@gmail.com.
Wonderful. Well, as always, it's been great to chat to you. Let's go and get a Lemsip, and we'll see you again next time.
Thanks so much,
Nina. Bye.
Right, bye.